Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry. I'm your host, Andrew Jelina. With me in studio today is Jeremy Halperin, CTO of Rare Breed Veterinary Partners. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for the invite. Glad to be here.
Thank you for making the trip down from Maine. It's probably a good idea we did this now and not in the winter.
Yeah, we don't want to be driving in the winter in New England if we don't have to.
Absolutely. So tell us about what got you interested in technology, interested in the industry way back when.
You know, I was one of those kids in the 80s that took everything apart, put everything back together, loved mechanics. Wasn't necessarily the most well-behaved child in school, so I didn't always get to use the computer at recess. But yeah, just loved video games. I remember when Nintendo came out and Atari and Odyssey and all those things, and really captivated me at a young age.
But then I think it was your daughter being born where you said, you know what, I think I'm really going to get into this industry.
Yeah, I moved out on my own at an early age, right around 15 years old, and wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do with my life. Decided to go to school, and that turned into an opportunity to be in a band. So took a right turn in college, and after 2 years, decided to try to make a band come true, and moved to Portland, ended up bartending and banging around Portland, one bartender a year while I was doing that. Had a lot of good times. But then, yeah, to your point, Andrew, my daughter was born and I knew it was time to make a change. So I was always really good at mathematics and decided to give computer science a try. So lots of algorithms, lots of mathematics, thoroughly enjoyed myself, super challenging degree program. And yeah, went through school and happily got my computer science degree.
So what kind of band were you in way back when?
We had a lot of originals. We had a really talented bassist who wrote songs. The influence was probably the Beatles. I hate to admit it, but maybe a little bit of Jerry Garcia, some Jimi Hendrix, and there was grunge. Grunge was happening back then, but we certainly weren't Soundgarden. I could never sing like Chris Cornell, but it was a lot of fun. We played at Bumstock, which was the festival for the college up there. So it was cool to have a dream and chase that down.
That's cool. And then I think you were doing some programming and DBA work.
Yeah, actually, I did some desktop support during my degree program and some system administration for the school that I attended. And after that, I landed a really sweet job for about $35,000 as a Delphi programmer.
Ooh.
Yeah, you know, right out of C++ and Java into Delphi. But there's a silver lining there. I ended up needing to be the full stack developer. The company that actually worked for this was one piece of software that only took care of one business vertical. So I became the developer, the product person, the QA person, and the call support person for this platform. So it wasn't the best language to start on, but I was able to understand the full breadth of having a product built in software. So that was helpful. And then I went into being a DBA, and we used a lot of Oracle. We're an Oracle shop. Lots of cool things, moving data between. I remember when Oracle came out with the rack system, the multi-server platform. So we're moving big box data warehouses onto these rack servers and writing scripts way back when in Perl, QAing your own program to move all the data for a $1 billion company into a rack system. So exciting. I had a lot of fun back then.
You said you did some Perl programming. Were you like a contributor to CPAN or?
I wasn't. I wish I was, but I wasn't. I was a pretty solid user, but not incredibly talented. We had a super talented gentleman in our group who taught me a lot. And we'll get to one of the lessons he taught me, I think, later when he decided to drop an index in production.
Very nice. Yeah, I had a deep dive into Perl in like the late 90s, early 2000s, to the really? Point where it's still kind of a reflex sometimes when there's some sort of text file thing and I'm forced myself to do Python instead to try and learn it. But
the regex stuff was just great.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, write a one-liner that you know nobody will ever be able to figure out.
I even used the spaceship operator one time, the one that's like a greater than and less than sign.
That's awesome.
So then I think you then went on to work on one of the original EE gift card implementations.
Absolutely. After I was at the previous place, which was a transaction-based credit card company, I went and received my MBA and decided to take on portfolio management for technical projects and started at that company and then moved to a company called CashStar, which was the original e-gift card. So yeah, it was really cool. We worked with companies like Starbucks and Amazon and Apple, and being in Maine and choosing to be in Maine, there aren't many opportunities where you get that type of exposure to the Fortune 50s and the Fortune 500s. And so that was just a really cool experience. I remember myself and the lead engineer traveling to Seattle and sitting in the top floor in a boardroom with Starbucks on one side of the table, Google on the other side of the table. And he and I were at the end of the table, just in awe, trying to fit in and get the job done. Ended up, we crushed it. And I think it was a million card program. And I can't remember exactly what it was for, but 50% of the proceeds went to a philanthropic organization, which was just amazing as well. So yeah, that was a super cool experience working with all of those companies in Maine.
Cool. And then you spent some time working with IDEX as well?
Yeah, awesome place. The lead software development diagnostic company, as far as I'm concerned, in the industry for veterinary care. Managed over 7 teams while I was there. Geez, from client server systems and things as funny as Delphi, all the way to being some of the first tenants in Amazon and actually helping Amazon with their billing program because nobody could figure out how and what and why we were paying for things. And so that was cool. And also took on a lot of dev work in the G Suite, which is also cool. And it's where we've landed at this new company that I'm at.
So that experience you got doing help desk in college, did that come in handy anytime later?
Yeah, I think it's funny with this new job. The two gentlemen that started it are just brilliant in every way, I would say, as human beings, intelligence. You know, our core values are love, respect, and fun. And they started this company called Rare Breed Veterinary Partners and offered me a flashy title. And it was more about the opportunity and working with them. But it's kind of funny, you know, you get your first title as a chief technology officer and you walk in and somebody needs their desktop configured and they don't understand how to install LastPass and you need to start ordering machines for people and keyboards. And it's like, wow, that experience in my past, not only, you know, desktop support, bartending, programming, it all really comes together. And I've needed that entire tool set to help bring this company, which was, I think we had one practice when I started 16 months ago. Now we have 20 practices and we're a $200 million company. So it's been a cool ride. But yeah, every single place that I've been has really built to this moment and really helped me succeed with this company.
I think working in a smaller company or a startup, or you just get exposure to everything and someone's got to do everything. And you're going to get thrown into stuff because maybe you're not big enough to have a dedicated guy or gal for that. Or maybe it only comes up once in a blue moon and it's not really worth dedicating someone's time to that task. And
yeah, you can't do that with a startup. It's really about getting the job done. And we've found luck in gratitude. Everybody that comes to work is just super grateful to be there. And it might sound cliche, but there's a reason we've gone from zero to 200 million in 16 months, right? There's some magic there. And everybody has to be willing to do their part. Exactly to your point. That's how you succeed.
So you talked a little bit about Rare Breed Veterinary Partners. Tell us a bit more. I think they've raised some money and you said they've been growing extremely rapidly.
Yeah. So the two co-founders have experience in the veterinary space as well. The goal for us is really to create a unique experience in the veterinary market. And we've had a ton of success with our brand at this point. So what happens typically in a corporate consolidator in the veterinary space is they buy the practice, they change the brand, they dictate the software tool set, they change the workflow. And they really drive towards that top line and bottom line. And so the way that we consider ourselves different is our customer is the practice staff, the veterinarian, the vet tech, the CSR, that's our customer. And how do we make them happier? How do we attract the best staff? And so what we found is that by partnering with the owner rather than buying them out completely, requesting that they keep their own brand because their brand is strong in their community, and then not changing all of their tools underneath them when we come in has been incredibly well received. Now, there's also other benefits come in, and what I'll notice from a technology side is that they're on Windows 7. They've got like 40 up and 5 down. These guys have no support technology-wise at all. So we just come in, we audit them, we give them all new equipment. Our accounting team ends up paying all the bills, and the HR staff is there for full support of the practice staff, as well as we're offering better benefits. I think that's our responsibility, is taking on the back-end operations without impacting the brand itself and the tribe.
Yeah, there's a certain culture that's in place, and during a lot of acquisitions, there's kind of a hammer and a nail mentality, and that the hammer will kind of squish that culture out of there and try to instill their culture, and doesn't always work well.
Which is exactly the antithesis of what we're trying to do, which I believe to be the reason we're succeeding so rapidly.
I got to imagine too, a lot of veterinarians, they're doctors for animals, and that's what they are first. And having to do all the stuff to run a practice that, you know, HR, PR, marketing, accounting, all the back of office stuff, it's necessary, but it takes them away from doing what they really want to do.
You nailed it. Veterinarians go to school to save animals' lives. They don't necessarily receive an MBA on the way out and need all those tools in their tool set. So to your point, Andrew, that's our goal. And the veterinary space is also incredibly stressful. There's a high suicide rate and attrition is incredibly high as well. So that's one of the reasons our model is working so well, is because we genuinely care about the practice staff. And we believe that if we treat the staff the best, we'll also attract the best talent in the market. If we attract the best talent in the market, it will strengthen our brand and also provide the best care for animals. So it sounds simple. That's definitely our approach, and it seems to be unique for us.
Now, is there a sweet spot in either size or location that your company looks for practices to join Rare Breed?
We do like practices mostly above 2 or more doctors, but as far as how large, no. One of the things that's very interesting in this market is the lack of technology in the corporate space and the inability to scale fast enough to actually consume the supply. There's a lot of demand to be sold. And so how do you onboard those practices fast enough? So how do you create a platform and an onboarding process where you can actually take on more than one practice at a time?
So working with your folks at Rare Breed, what is your management philosophy?
Yeah, definitely my philosophy is low drama, high throughput. It's a quadrant and it's very simple. Just do your job and have fun. There's no reason to stir up trouble while you're at work.
Yeah, the more you can make work kind of a sanctuary slash place that you can concentrate, get stuff done, feel good about what you're doing, and make money at the end of the day so you can support your family or whatever you want to do, the better. Some folks just kind of gravitate towards that high drama, low throughput.
It's true. Even on the drive down here, Andrew, I was like, wow, you're so fortunate from where you came from. And I've talked about this a little bit with our CEO, but those people that are like, you're so lucky, or even when you're reflecting, you're like, I'm so lucky. But I think it actually comes from that low drama, that the kindness and the gratitude for the moment creates a really positive energy. I look at Rare Breed and I look at the team there, and everybody jumps on the morning call and everybody's just grateful to be there. There's something special there and everybody's kind of caught it. So there's a little bit of magic, I think, in kindness and gratitude.
So I know once you fold in the practices, you mentioned that you're doing some stuff on the back end in order to get as much data as you can in-house and then analyze it.
Absolutely. So we're fortunate in the veterinary space. There are actually third parties that connect to a lot of those antiquated systems in the market and then extrapolate that data and transform it into something that I can consume at a transactional level. It's like when I worked at the credit card processing company. So now I'm just reading transactions out of a vet, and I used to be reading credit card transactions. So it's really awesome because now we're able to bring in the revenue, some of the costs that go along with a transaction, bring that into our ERP. We've brought in AP. We've automated AP and our credit card processing. We're bringing payroll in and our HR system into the ERP. And it's pretty exciting for us because a lot of the corporates in the veterinary space, they're either dictating a tool so they can get measurement or they're not getting measurement. So I think we found a way to crack the nut on having an agnostic software system, but also being able to make decisions based on quantity and fact rather than opinion.
Are there any other insights you get from having all that data aggregated across practices?
Yeah, it's going to get incredible. So the point of integrating these systems is so that we can also bring in creating a data lake where we can bring in non-financial data as well from the HR system, from Salesforce, from our pulse surveys that we send. And the goal will be for us to create a way to measure progress, financials, expense and revenue, happiness for personnel, administrative types of KPIs, and then also medical KPIs and what's working best across our portfolio. So our toes are in the water. We have a data lake up and we're trending some of the survey results right now from our customers, the practice staff, and it's bearing fruit for us, as well as integrating these financial streams into our ERP. So we're excited. We think that that's the fastest path to growth. So, you know, automation and integration is where we're going.
What about on the project management side? I know we've all done some time doing waterfall at one point in our career and having to deal with very interdependent systems. What do you do to try to evolve that where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately for me, it's 2020, so we can just stand up cloud systems. And they all integrate. If you're at the enterprise level, you can even bring in single sign-on, things like that, Active Directory, whatever you'd like to do. So it's just, I mean, you're taking me back to a company where I think we had one release a year because everything was so tethered together. And it was all waterfall. And I remember being in meeting rooms with 45 technical people, managers. You've probably been in this room before. And everybody's just praying that DBA is going to run that one permission script so the whole release doesn't fall apart, right? So
please no rollback, please no rollback.
Yeah, totally. I'm on the call at 2 a.m. building out replication to the other side of the continent, hoping that I don't mess up because I don't want to screw up the authorizer for a credit card company. But one of the things that I took from working at CashStar is iterative development, different flavors of agile, and the need for Scrum, and just communicating, but also being agile has thankfully come to life in the last, 10 to 15 years of software development. You know, it's pretty simple for us. We meet like twice a week right now. We're a small shop and we're in the middle of UAT testing. So just using best practices.
Now, even if we are smart and careful, sometimes you do blow up production. You mentioned you might have a story where you were watching that happen.
Yeah, well, we had a guy on our DBA team and we all called him Boy Genius. Because he was so smart, right? And he's the one who basically created the Perl architecture for us. And it was sick. We were doing replication. We were doing things with Oracle that no one was doing, actually. But one day we were all sitting there. It was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And the boy genius was pale. And he had sweat just streaming down his forehead. And I had no idea what was going on. And then I ended up being the best man at this guy's wedding, which is kind of funny. But anyway, his phone rings. And he picks it up and he puts it down. And I said, who is that? And if my memory serves me correctly, it was the CEO of the company for a $1 billion company. Somebody had let him know that the database engineer had just dropped the index on our authorizer table. And so that people at the pump across the nation were not able to swipe their card. The whole team kind of huddled together because we realized that our database was holding up hundreds of thousands of dollars, just waiting for an index to rebuild. And then when it did rebuild, we went and had beer, but that taught me a pretty good lesson to not around in production.
Woohoo! This is my 25th recruiter call for the same job today. New high score!
The 3-week wait between my first interview and my second interview is my favorite time of year.
My recruiter says he is my best friend, but I haven't heard from him since I started the job 2 years ago.
Your background in real estate and multi-level marketing makes you the perfect person to advise me on tech careers.
Finding your next consulting gig should not be this difficult. Quite frankly, you deserve better. Syrinx is the consulting company founded and run by software consultants. We get you. Find out why our employees are some of the happiest and best paid consultants in the industry at Syrinx.com. That's Syrinx.com. Find a better way today. Syrinx Consulting is a proud sponsor of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry.
Yeah, it's important to be methodical, maybe have two sets of eyes on everything, kind of like pair programming, you know, pair DevOpping.
Yeah, when you're losing a couple $100,000, you probably want to think before you hit enter.
You become infamous instead of famous.
Totally, totally.
Now, I think today, with things being largely cloud-based, you mentioned AWS, but you're also using Google Cloud. What made you choose them?
We're actually using Google. One of our partners, our third-party partners, is using Redshift and Amazon. But I like Google because it brings business solutions. Even, you know, the difference between going to reInvent and Google Next. Amazon seems to always throw a different flavor of a tool or a widget or something that I can use, but Google seems to pull all of their tools together and present solutions, which I'm really in tune to. How do these different pieces of software and hardware create a business solution that I can scale and learn from? And especially in the data space, I think Google has done a lot of good work there, and that's what we're exploring as well. So that's the reason we've chosen Google.
The mistakes can sometimes have ripple effects. I was talking to a friend and someone in his company, there was an engineer who decided that ID at the end of certain column names needed to be capital I, capital D, not capital I, lowercase d, or lowercase I, lowercase d, and decided to ripple this change out. And it turns out that one part of the architecture was case sensitive. And this ripple effect, there's still finding problems like 18 months later with this rippling through the architecture.
It's insane.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Our whole job is case sensitive. And semicolons.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Closing braces.
Yep.
So have there been any great mentors along the way that have really kind of helped you rapidly advance or understand things in a different light?
Jeez, I would say that's been part of my good fortune. Is if I look at each job and each place I've worked, there's been incredibly gifted mentors along the way. And yeah, I've been fortunate to work with some incredibly great people. The co-founders that I'm working with right now, they're actually incredible mentors as well. I would put them right there at the top.
I think you mentioned on the pre-call, the CEO, Dan.
Yeah, Dan, the CEO for Rare Breed Veterinary Partners. He served in Iraq as a ranger. He oversaw the lives of hundreds of people, pulled himself out with his bootstraps as well, and put himself into MIT, and got the best character, and his mind is incredibly fast. But the way that he carries himself, directs himself, treats other people with dignity, it's unmatched. I would say the same for his partner, Sean Miller. They're both just amazing people.
It seems that some people's default position is jealousy and envy instead of like...
emulation and admiration are where everyone should be. Dan's amazing. He's one of those people that I think he's driven by admiration, emulation, being a good human, taking care of the people around him. And that's obviously what you want in your working culture. There's no need for envy and jealousy, and that stirs up drama. So I think that's the way Dan carries himself.
Coolest thing you've ever done in a job, what would that be?
Coolest thing I've ever done at a job would be the story that I told about going to Seattle and sitting down with Starbucks and Google and just realizing, because I went there and I was a little nervous. I chose to live in Maine. I had actually interviewed at Facebook and Amazon, but I'd always chose to stay in Maine. So there was this little bit of mystery about what was going to happen. And so I got there, and the funniest thing is I realized that the brightest people in the world were also the kindest. Both the people from Starbucks and Google were just the nicest people that you could ever meet. Totally gracious, totally welcoming. And that was also a big lesson for me too. I was like, you know, hey, I just went out and met the smartest people in the world and they were really cool. So why am I working with people that aren't the smartest in the world and they're kind of a**s? I think that was good for me too, right? Because you're like, well, I guess I can just be a kind person. Because that works. Like, that's what it's all about. And so that was a good lesson for me meeting those people.
How about that time you took over a remote team that was not well managed?
Yeah, that's probably the story that hits me the hardest as far as my feelings. I took over a team in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and there were seven people on the team, and they were all called customer consultant fours. And so I was a development manager, so I'm like, okay, why did I just get this team? So I dug in a little bit, and I realized that they were all doing some form of development, or they were all some form of this Kanban Scrum process. So I asked for the job description, and I read it, and they were all supposed to know C++, Java, SQL. And I'm like, these people are getting paid hourly.
As a customer service four, whatever that is.
Yeah, a customer service four. And so the coolest thing, and it did take some work, but the coolest thing probably in my career was I was able to re-level that entire team. And even some of the folks that weren't necessarily technical anymore, I made roles for them. So one was perfect for QA. One was like the team parent. So she ended up as the scrum master and ended up changing their salaries so much that I knew that I had changed their lives. And I knew that there was an extra car payment and extra groceries and maybe the ability to buy a house coming soon for these people. So they were so incredibly grateful too that it just, for me, it's something I'll never forget doing. And yeah, the chance to do something like that is amazing.
Now, I imagine to work at Rare Breed, it may not be a requirement to own a pet, but you must.
Yeah, I have a puppy. It's funny when you get a puppy, I think everybody's like, hey, on Facebook, they're like, wow, that's hard. And I'm a parent of two children. So I'm like, yeah, I already know what I'm doing. And then you get the puppy, right? And then your friends are right. Because the first month you're waking up three times a night. I don't even know when's morning and night. But yeah, so I have a puppy. Her name's Maggie. She's potty trained now, but yeah, your friends are right when they warn you. Pets are hard. And I've got two cats. The dog's nice and they kind of kick its sometimes, but we're a happy family. We all get along great.
A dog's like half a kid, especially in the puppy stage.
She's wonderful. She's a little black lab, super sweet, actually rambunctious with other dogs, which I love because, you know, she's not a pushover. But yeah, it's like you're a mini me. It's something that needs your attention all the time.
Yeah, we're about to dive back in. We're on a list. So we have two dogs now. We had three. Bo passed away like right at the beginning of COVID.
Uh-huh.
To make the whole year worse. We're on a list now, which is pretty darn hard to get a dog during COVID, it turns out.
It really is. I probably shouldn't admit this, but I looked in every rescue I could, and I donated to a majority of them and somehow never reached the top of the list. But fortunately for me, a coworker was on a list for a black lab, and so she didn't want the lab anymore. And so when her name came up,
kind of slid in there.
Well, the thing was, is I was like, can you just tell them it's me? And then she was like, no, because they're going to say you're not me. So you can't do that. So we came up with this. Basically, I was married to her while I adopted the dog, but we're no longer together and she's back with her husband. But yeah, that's how I ended up getting the dog, which probably isn't the best thing.
Well, I think we're going to have to drive to Indiana to pick up the dog that we wanted to get. Yeah, the breeder that we got our other two Goldens from is no longer around here. So my wife found a place online and the dogs are cute. They're beautiful and we've had very good luck with them. But yeah, it's going to be a bit of a hike.
Yeah, that's a hike. It's working out for us too at Rare Breed Veterinary Partners. Everybody wants an animal right now. The only reason I have a puppy is because I was on a lake hiding from the virus and being socially responsible. So we're seeing a huge uptick in the veterinary market as well. Everybody is buying a furry friend and spending more time with their animals. And you and I both know how near and dear they are to our heart. So it's actually a really cool business to be part of. It's a really cool business.
Yeah, I think most people have a soft spot for either dogs or cats, sometimes both.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned you're on a lake and you have a couple of kids. What do you guys do for fun there?
Paddleboard, get in the boat, canoe, swim. I should do more fishing. I'm not a great fisherman. I might be doing a disservice to my son there, but the last time he got a fish, I think it scared him. So we'll try that again next season. And then Maggie's brand new, so it'll be cool. I got her on the stand-up paddleboard last year at the very end of the summer, but it'll be good to get her swimming. And then I have a place in Portland where I bring her to the actual ocean, which is good for her too.
Do you try to get your kids interested in technology at all?
I couldn't keep my son away from technology if I had to, which I'm fortunate for because he's an actor. And so I'm not really certain that his dreams will pan out, sort of how I was a rock star for like a year of my life, right? It didn't really work. And so there is a funny story. He came up to me and he said, "Hey, Dad, I have a backup plan." I said, "Okay, well, what's your backup plan?" He said, "Well, if I'm not going to be an actor, I think I'm just going to be a comic." And I'm like, "Jacoby, that's not a backup plan, dude. Like, that's another dream. So like, what are you going to do?" He has decided he wants to be a coder, and that makes me proud as well. He's a good kid, and like everybody's children, probably has a bit too much screen time. But if he can put that to use and get a degree in science and support himself the way I've done with computer science, I'll be more than happy for him.
I know an awful lot of software developers, and I know that some are also actors or stand-up comedians or artists or musicians or whatever, but the software development pays the bills.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to lead with the real and then bring me the dreams.
Well, Jeremy, thank you very much for coming down today and sharing your insights and experience with the listeners of Underserved.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm so grateful. What an awesome opportunity.
And we'll talk to everyone next time on the next episode of Underserved.